Welcome to the podcast that helps you build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. This is the Rebel Capitalist Show.
All right, guys, it gives me a great deal of pleasure to welcome someone back to the Rebel Capitalist Show. He is my good buddy. Really needs no introduction. I think he's one of the greatest teachers of our lifetime, for sure. And he's the second best storyteller I have ever heard, the best being my father.
That's good.
So you got some tough competition there for best storyteller, Robert. Welcome back, buddy. Can't wait to have an incredible discussion. There's a lot going on in the world today, isn't there?
Yeah, and I just want to unabashedly promote your collective event you and Kenny McElroy do.
Yeah,
because I just came back from Florida and it's still burning in my brain.
Yeah,
see, that's when you know it's a good event, and it's still burning my brain. But what I started thinking about is this gap between the rich and the poor. That's been my issue.
Yeah.
Forever. You know, my poor dad was a PhD and he was poor. PhD stands for poor, helpless, and desperate. But I was at your event with Kenny and all this and going, looking at the people. And the gap widens today more than money. It's information.
Yeah.
And so I'm at your event and all this, and your speakers are fantastic, obviously. Of course, I'm one of them. And then you have guys like Rollo, who is a character, and he says stuff that disturbs everybody, men and women.
Yeah. Nicole was in there for the whole Rollo thing. That's a funny story in and of itself. And Peter McCullough right after Rollo, you know, great combo.
Yeah. So the speakers are fantastic, but as I'm hanging out with your crowd, and the collective is very high end, you know, it's very nice to.
Yeah, for those of you who aren't following, that's our mastermind group that we have with Kenny McElroy and Jason Hartman.
Yeah. But the thing I was looking at, the gap grows wider because of the groups you hang out with.
Yeah.
And in today's day and age, like I have friends, family, and classmates, and you know, all this, but they're falling behind. They're clueless in Chicago. And so I left Dallas thinking about that, going, God almighty, this gap is getting wider and wider and wider.
Yeah.
Do you know? And it's sad because that was an old saying when I was a young guy, you are your five guys you hang out with.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's a nice guideline. But the people I hang out with, the guys like you, Kenny, and all these other characters, and we're up to date. You know, my next book I'm starting on this summer is with Jim Rickards. You know, I wrote two books with Trump. And you go, holy mackerel, who am I hanging out with? But when I was with your collective group, I'm going, what a magnificent group of people. Do you know what I mean? And that's where the gap is. The guys in your collective group are accelerating out. They're accelerating. You know, this crash we're going into, we're already in, is only going to make them richer.
Yeah. You know, what worries me about what you're saying too, is this whole push towards censorship. So, you know, as we know now, just looking back on the last 2 years, a lot of what was deemed disinformation by the mainstream media, we now know to be true. And moving forward, you know, we've got Biden proposing this Ministry of Truth. Hopefully that isn't going anywhere, but that's the direction they want to take us. And I think it'll be not just with, we'll call it the survey sickness, not just with Russia, Ukraine, but also with freedom, liberty, and potentially financial education. You know, I can imagine going back to the late 1990s when you wrote Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And if that would have been, let's say, 3 years into the future, if we get this Ministry of Truth, them labeling your book economic or financial disinformation.
Yeah.
And, you know, potentially censoring you, just like they did with Dr. McCullough, Dr. Malone, and what they're trying to do to Rogan. You know, what if they would have done that to you and the millions of people that benefited from your book would have never been able to read it? That's my concern moving forward.
Well, just what you're saying is so accurate because the book was censored by the New York Times. And the publishers in New York wouldn't touch the book. And so I had to self-publish it.
Yeah, right.
It was a, was a blessing in disguise. But I just don't understand it, George. Why would somebody want to censor an idea? But yeah. That's how threatened these liberal academic types are, like my poor dad. You know, there's something really sick inside our system. It's very sick. It's rotting.
Yeah. I mean, that takes us to the new book you just had come out, The Capitalist Manifesto. And how did you publish that, Robert? Did you do it the traditional way, or did you do that one the same way you did Rich Dad, Poor Dad?
Well, this is the book here. It's a Capitalist Manifesto, you know. And the positioning statement says, how to counter communism taught in our schools.
Yeah, right.
By teaching capitalism in our homes. So Rich Dad, Poor Dad was the sales brochure for my board game Cash Flow.
Right.
And so this book here is possibly the main reason I do all this work, is because a question I ask, what does school teach us about money? Nothing.
Yeah.
Go to school, get a job, save money, pay your taxes, buy a house, get out of debt, and invest for the long term in the stock market. I don't do any of that stuff. I refuse to. But to me, that's financial misinformation. You look at what's going to happen. You know, the other book I wrote about 3 years ago is called Who Stole My Pension?
Yeah.
And my prediction is my tinfoil hat, is they're going to wipe out my generation, the baby boom generation. When the market crashes, we're the first generation of what's called defined contribution pension plan. Up to that, my parents' generation had defined benefit pension plan. So if I worked for, let's say, my father worked for Ford, let's say, if he did, he got a defined benefit, which is basically a paycheck for the rest of your life. But defined contribution, which kicked in 1974 under ERISA, Employee Retirement Insurance Act. When that kicked in, that led to the 401k. So 1974 was a year I was getting out of the Marine Corps, and I smelled another rat. I'm going, what are they doing?
Right.
But anytime that, you know, the government says Income Retirement Security Act, you know, it's exactly the opposite.
Yeah, right. That's what our good friend Ron Paul always says, right? That's what our good friend Ron Paul.
Yeah. So anyway, that's why I wrote Capitalist Manifesto. And what happened was in 2019, as you and Kenny and Rollo helped me out the most, Kim is the love of my life. She's my soulmate. And then she says, I've had it with you. I'm out of here. 35 years, she says, I'm out of here. So you, Kenny, and Rollo slapped me around, you know, wake up. And I'm still kind of brokenhearted. That was the 2019, so 3 years ago or 4 years ago, whatever it was. And Kenny calls me a simp. You call me a beta. You know? And that's why I love Rollo and you and Kenny so much, because you have a male point of view. And I really had become a simp, you know, a simp. In my generation was called pussy whipped.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
If a woman said jump, how high, you know,
yeah.
Look my shoes. Okay. You know? And so after you and Rollo and Kenny McElroy got through with me, I got a different frame of myself. I was this very happy, fat, rich guy pushing a shopping cart in Safeway behind my wife. Yeah. And so when Kim left, I mean, I just got off the phone with her. We're still in love. We're getting divorced, but we're not splitting our assets and all this. We still have to share houses. But what happened was I stopped growing as a man.
That's right.
And that's the lesson that you, in fact, you were the guy that bought me the hour-long consultation with Rollo, and he and I have become really good friends, you know. And Kenny was always Kenny introduced me a whole new vocabulary I never heard of, like Karen. I said, what's a Karen? But it was, so that was 2019. I was going, Jesus, have I become this big, fat, happily married rich guy with a gut. You know what I mean? Pushing this cart in Safeway, you know, helping Kim shop and all this stuff. And I was very happy. I mean, I loved it. I was, you know, I never cheated on her, never did any of that stuff, happily married. But I had stopped growing, George.
Yeah, right.
You know, and that's why she left. So it was turned out to be one of the best things. But in the meantime, I'm sitting there and the repo market crashed on September 17th, 2019.
Yeah.
And the last time the repo market crashed, that's where the banks, everybody trades. It's like a pawn shop for bankers, I call it. Mm-hmm. Last time I had that happened was 2008. And I'm going, oh my God, it's coming again. And then COVID hit. I went, oh my God. So I saw these things in action. And the book I'm writing with James Records, you know, he wrote Currency Wars and all that. And Jim worked with the CIA on currency games, war games with money. So the book Jim and I work on is called The Ravens, is How Do You See the Future?
Right.
You know, so as soon as I saw these things line up, repo crashed to September 17, 2019, and COVID. And then my friend Trump, I've written two books with Trump, he gets taken down. Then you know, January 6th, they accuse him of storming the Capitol and all this and going, what is going on here? And then censorship kicks in. We can't criticize COVID. And I went, oh my God. So that was the genesis of this book here, Capitalist Manifesto, because in 1965, when I graduated from high school, I got two nominations, one to Naval Academy and one to the Merchant Academy. And then so I'm not being a very bright guy. I'm looking at a Naval Academy, Merchant Academy, starting pay Naval Academy for an ensign, $200, starting pay for King's Pointer, $2,000.
Yeah. Yeah. No brainer.
Yeah. So I choose King's Point, and then my instructor, my economics. So it's a military school. You start yelling at you from day one, you know, which I needed. I was a sloppy surfer boy from Hawaii. And they're screaming at me. I go, what the hell are they screaming at, you know? But I need discipline. But the economics teacher has us, we didn't read Malthus or Keynes or those guys, Ricardo. He had us read Marx. So in 1965, I'm reading that little 48-page pamphlet. I used to have one around here.
Yeah.
The most powerful book ever written,
yeah.
The Communist Manifesto. And most people have never read it. It's only 48 pages, and it's been one of the most influential books in world history. So I read that book in 1965, and I had this blinding cognition. I said, oh my God, my family are communists. We just don't know it, you know? And so not to get nasty with my father, a poor dad, and my rich dad was basically a capitalist. So I was sitting right in front of me the whole time. I was growing up as a kid. Rich dad and poor dad. But communism is like a religion. It's like, you know, being either Christian or Buddhist or Jewish. Communism is like a economic religion. That's all it is. So a person can be a communist sitting right next to you living in, you know, Toledo, Ohio, but they harbor communist ideas and not know it because they don't know what a communist idea is. So I'll give you one example of communism. Marx said, workers of the world unite, labor unions. And it's really interesting. My poor dad was head of the teachers union. I'm going, holy mackerel. So I grew up with my dad, poor dad, holding teachers union meetings in our house. And, you know, George, I really don't like school teachers because I got punished a lot in school. And I wasn't interested. So I realized, well, school teachers are communists because they join a labor union. Now, on the other side of town, I go to my rich dad and his employees, he owned a chain of hotels and restaurants, and they were trying to organize his employees into a labor union. So at the same time, my poor dad's holding labor union meetings in our house. And then I go across, I would study with my rich dad for free just to learn from him. So he says, I want you to come in tonight. I said, why? He says there's going to be a strike vote. If there's a strike, they unionize. They're going to walk out. Right. And so you have this huge hotel chain with no employees. So at 16, I'm down. I'm still in high school. And I'm manning the desk of the hotel. And they're scrambling. You know, it's kind of like today, looking for workers. Mm-hmm. Feel similar. And the strike vote came. And they lost by about 5 votes. So Rich Dad didn't go union. But when I came home, this is all memories coming back after I'm in school reading the Communist Manifesto, you know, it's retrograding in time. My dad screams at me, poor dad says, how dare you break the picket line? You're a scab. You know, I didn't even know what a scab was. You know, it's like, I didn't know what a Karen was. I didn't know what a simp was. I was just, yeah.
You were only 16 then, weren't you?
Yeah. And then the next thing is in Manifesto is Marx's thing is the abolition of private property. Now, my poor dad had nothing. We rented. He was the head of education, PhD. We couldn't afford a house. You know, but Rich Dad took this land in Hilo, Hawaii, and he drilled septics into it, and he put up military Quonset huts, you know, those half moon. And my dad, poor dad, went nuts. He says, there he is, a landlord, a slumlord. I'm going, what? He's mean. He takes advantages of people. I'm going, so here I'm fast forwarding into King's Point in 1965, reading the Communist Manifesto. I'm going, oh my God, that's my dad.
Yeah, right.
But this is the final thing. So what does Klaus Schwab say? With the Great Reset and
COVID. You'll own nothing and you'll be happy.
Huh?
You'll own nothing and you'll be happy.
Amen, brother. You'll own nothing and you'll be happy. And that's what's going on today, 2022, May 2022. They're winning. Communism is winning all across America. So that's why I wrote this book here, is how do you counter it?
Yeah, and to your point, the teachers are teaching this ideology, whether they know it or not. You know,
that's correct. It's a religion. It's not really a weapon.
And a lot of these teachers, you know, they've never run a business. They've just go straight from college, getting their PhD to teaching. So they're in this bubble, just like your friends in Chicago. You know, you started off the conversation saying that there's a greater and greater divide between the people that can really see what's happening in the world and those people that just have their head buried in the sand. And a lot of that has to do with the people they surround themselves by.
Amen. And Who are your friends?
So if it's teachers, if all your other friends are teachers and professors,
yeah,
and this is going to shape your worldview, and then this is going to transition into what you're teaching the kids today, and then they grow up with the same worldview, and it's kind of this cycle.
Yep. And that's why I started this whole thing. Well, when I came back from your collective group in Dallas, I realized that's where the gap is taking. That's why the gap is accelerating wider.
Yeah.
Where were they when they could have been at the collective? But most of them were there's microeconomics and macroeconomics. People cannot see macro. That's the problem.
Yeah.
But they can't see micro, and micro is just standing at the gas pump going, well, why is gas $6 a gallon? That's micro. Why is food going up? But they have no idea. They're clueless in Chicago. You know what I mean? They're just clueless. Whereas when they come to your events or the events that you guys hold on, and you know, people's eyes get open. Just like I didn't know what a Karen or a simp was. Now I do.
A little different topic, same concept for sure. So one thing I'd like to, I mean, it kind of dovetails on what you're saying. I wanted to ask you how your worldview has really changed over the last, call it since 2019. And I mean, it sounds like the repo market was kind of an epiphany moment for you. And that's when you, I think, started watching some of the videos to try to connect the dots. But, what's great is you've just got such an incredible history, and you can take the stories that you've lived through at an early age. And as you learn more as an adult, and now at 75 years old, you reflect back and you're like, wait a minute. Then you see your childhood through a completely different lens as well. And it's this constant learning process. So I know we've discussed it a little bit, but I'd love to dive even deeper into how your worldview has changed over the last, call it 2 or 3 years, and you know how you carry that into the future. And then this next book you're writing with Rickards, you know, what do you see coming, and how can the average Joe and Jane, how can they prepare?
Well, that's, you know, like you're primarily macroeconomics.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like I said, macro is invisible. I mean, people are clueless and they don't know what the heck's going on.
Yeah.
And so a definition of macro is a span of time also. And then you can see the connect the dots and then things like this. And we've all had experiences where you see something, then a few years later it comes true. So macro, and then I take it good that you, so I'm a storyteller. And the reason I think I'm successful as a writer, I only write about things I've done. You know, most technical guys, well, you know, the moving average went this way and the stochastic went that way. Everybody checks out. But I only write stories of what I've done.
Yeah. Remember the story at the collective you told, Robert? Remember the key was, what do you know? Remember the guy told you, the guy in New York, he looked at you and said, what do you know? And you and that just, and it didn't really hit you when you were in the meeting, but when you left the meeting, it dawned on you what he was, the message he was trying to deliver. And that's what made all the difference.
Yeah. As a question for everybody to ask is, what do you really know?
Right. Right.
And the story goes like this. I wrote my first book was called, You Run to Be Rich and Happy, Don't Go to School.
So just, maybe your worldview hasn't changed.
No. I mean, I went to school to learn how to get rich. And then I get told some religious dogma, the love of money. I'm 9 years old. I said, I want to get rich. I'm 9. The teacher goes, the love of money is the root of all evil.
Right.
And I said, am I back in Sunday school? That's a real wise head. But what happened was I wrote, if you want to be rich and happy, don't go to school. This is years and years ago now. It became a bestseller just because there's a lot of people pissed off at school, especially today. I mean, that was 30 years ago I wrote that book, If I'm Rich, Happy. So Simon & Schuster calls and they said, we want to talk to you about your book. And I went, oh, thank Jesus, you know. And the irony of it is I flunked out of high school twice because I can't write.
Yeah.
It's not that I can't write because you don't like what I was writing. You know, same censorship problem. Yeah. Like I go to New York and this guy named Bob Azahina, bless his heart, man. He was the best guy, Japanese guy like me. And he sits there, Kim and I sit there. We got, you know, we're in New York City. We're at Simon & Schuster. And my little self-published book is going to make that. He says, pretty good book. I went, what? He says, Azahina says, I can take your book, but I'm not. Fuck, I came all the way from Hawaii to sit here. And you're going to tell me I'm in New York City. You're not going to take it. He could have told me over the phone.
Yeah.
He said, I'll tell you this. He says, you haven't told me what you know. I went, what? He says, it's a pretty good book. If I'm rich and happy, don't go to school. I could take it and I could push it, but it wouldn't be a great book. You haven't told me what you know. And so at the collective, that's what I was admonishing everybody in the room. Pretty, what do you know? What do you know? What are you afraid of saying in many ways? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Especially today, 2022. But anyway, so I didn't like it. You know, Kim and I still remember standing in front of Simon & Schuster, the bay dejected. You know, we got to fly all the way back to Hawaii. And then about a year later, I'm sitting on a little cabin in a mountainside in Arizona. I said, what do I know? What do I know? What do I know? And then all of a sudden the keystrokes came out, like almost, I had a rich dad and I had a poor dad.
Right.
And that's where rich dad, poor dad came from. And if this guy Azahina hadn't challenged me to go deeper, what do you know? So that's how we started this whole thing, is that we all know something and we should say it.
And we have to be very careful about what we're learning. I think this goes to your earlier point and where we started the conversation. And those five people are, you know, how you're forming your worldview. You've got to be careful. You've got to leverage the truth, the knowledge that you have through your life experience. But then you also, especially in today's day and age with this push towards censorship and propaganda, quite frankly, you've got to be very careful about what you're learning and what you will know in the future. Hey guys, I want to remind you to get your tickets to Rebel Capitalist Live. This is the live conference I do twice per year with all of your favorite speakers from the Rebel Capitalist Show and experts in investing, commodities, real estate, freedom, and liberty. All of your favorite topics, all of your favorite speakers. The next Rebel Capitalist Live is going to be in Miami, and tickets increase in price as we get closer to the event. So go to rebelcapitalistlive.com right now to get your tickets to the next Rebel Capitalist Live. It's the conference you cannot afford to miss. It'll help you increase your financial freedom and, more importantly, your personal freedom. You'll get intel that you won't hear anywhere else. Past speakers have included icons in macroeconomics, investing, and personal freedom and liberty. People like Dr. Ron Paul, Robert Kiyosaki, Brent Johnson, Lynn Alden, Jeff Snyder, Richard Werner, Mark Moss, Lynette Zhang, and Robert Breedlove, just to name a few. So once again, go to Rebel Capitalist Live right now and get your tickets today. What are you doing in your own life to make sure that you're able to see the truth through all the propaganda? And I'm sure this isn't the first, you know, this isn't your first rodeo. I'm sure you've seen a lot of propaganda all over the world, including in the United States. So what do you do and what will you do in the future to try to find the truth?
Well, that's why I think macro versus micro, you know, where I tell I'm a storyteller. So 64, I was looking at this dime, U.S. dime.
Yeah.
And at 64, there was a copper tinge on it. And I went, why is there a, I'm 16 years old in high school, you know, what's this copper tinge doing? And I didn't know at the time. So that was 64. 65, I fly to New York and read Communist Manifesto at the Academy. 66, I'm in Vietnam. So it was like almost the sequence of events. I'm watching the Vietnam War as a midshipman, a student on board a bomb carrier in Cam Ranh Bay, Vietnam, watching this war. And so I could see the Communist Manifesto, everything he was saying coming true, if that makes sense to you. And then, as you know, George, that copper tinge has been tried by every empire throughout history.
Right.
Is because the copper tinge is they took copper and they put silver on top of it. And it's Gresham's law. They debased the money. And Gresham's law says when bad money enters a system, good money goes into hiding.
Yeah, right.
And today, 2022, we have the most massive crisis going. Of course, 71, Nixon took the dollar off the gold standard and all that stuff happened. But today, just because I was this kid, 16 years old, looking at my dime going, what is this thing? I didn't realize at the time I was looking at Gresham's law.
Yeah, right.
And today the debt, as you know, as record says, the debt is so massive, it cannot be paid. So that's why Klaus Schwab and the Great Reset and all these guys step up. And you know, they're stacking the deck right now. You know, they're trying to change the Supreme Court, you know, the Treasury. And it's... America has now become communist. And yes. That's why I wrote this book here.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I, you know, just throughout my own experience in doing these YouTube videos, in the whiteboard videos, I've got to do quite a bit of, from some of them, I've got to do a bit of research there. But my personal learning has grown exponentially since 2019, just because I've had the opportunity to continue to interview people like you and do these whiteboards. And one of the things it's allowed me to do is build a framework so I can look at the current events and see them through this framework of what I believe to be true based on extensive amounts of research and conversations with super smart people like yourself. And then I'm able to predict, I think, better what may happen in the future as far as the probabilities. So as an example, I was doing a presentation the other day that I was preparing for. And I think it's probably a presentation I'll do at maybe Kenny's event, so you'll see it. But I wanted to figure out, you know, we talk about Klaus Schwab and we talk about the global elite and Gates and all these people, but no one can really pinpoint, you know, what is their objective. It's always kind of all over the place. So it's this guessing game where no one really knows. And you don't know if they're behind certain things or maybe they're just reacting to them or just trying to take advantage of a crisis. But if you really go back and study, which I did, it takes you back to a book, which I don't know if you've read, but I'd highly suggest it. It's called The Prince. And it was by someone.
Machiavelli.
That's right. Machiavelli. And if you start with The Prince and then go forward to Thomas Malthus in 1800, and then go to the Club of Rome, and then go to Kissinger, and then you go to Klaus, and then you go to The Limits to Growth, which was the paper that came out in 1972. Then you start to see, and then you listen to what Bill Gates is saying today. You look
same thing.
Yeah, it's the exact same thing. It's just repackaged. And so then you look at the global government's response to, we'll call it the Cerveza sickness, or this propaganda that we see towards, you know, what's happening in Russia and Ukraine, not just on the US side, but on the Russian side as well. And then you see what's happening with China, and then you see what's happening with this push towards censorship, and you look at it through the lens of Malthus and The Prince by Machiavelli, and it all starts to make a lot of sense. I think that's how I'm personally trying to find the truth.
Yeah, but understand that's macro. I mean, because it's not about what's happening as you're pumping gas into your car or trying to buy some vegetables at Safeway. Because you have to go throughout history. So macro is invisible. And the average person never heard of Machiavelli, The Prince, Malthus, Ricardo, and all those guys.
Yeah,
they don't know that history is repeating today.
Yeah, that's right. And so, what was the quote, Robert? That if you don't know history, you're doomed to repeat it.
Right.
Maybe the Churchill said that or something.
Well, the other one is history proves that people don't learn from history.
I've never heard of that one, but that's definitely really good.
But I think the most important thing I could pass on today's wisdom is who are your friends? That's what I came away from the collective. And I'm so blessed. I have you, Kenny, and all these guys. And my wife Kim is still, she's one of the smartest women I know. And we're
great. Ditto.
Yeah, she is so freaking smart. And I have friends who are the village idiots. I'm going, holy mackerel, why do you hang out with them? But that's their context. You know, they hang out with poor, stupid people or highly educated people who know nothing. I mean, you know, one of my big beefs is just because you went to college doesn't mean you know anything. But we all know guys with their PhDs, they think that's it, or they're doctors and all this. I'm going, but you don't know anything about money.
You Robert, don't. How do you personally determine who is smart and who isn't, from a standpoint of who you want to hang around with and actually spend time with? Because to your point, you can have someone that's incredibly intelligent with two PhDs and but they don't know anything. They're the village idiot.
Right.
But then there's other people like, I don't know if I'd throw myself in that category, but other people who are very uneducated, who have maybe never taken an econ class, never taken a finance class. I don't know if Kenny even went to college. I doubt even, maybe he did, but he got C's like both of us. He's a very poor student. So most people would say, oh, this Kenny guy, he's kind of stupid. I don't want to spend time with him. Yeah. And they'd look at the PhD Paul Krugman and say, oh, I want to spend all my time with Krugman. So you choose the opposite people. So how did you build that sixth sense?
Well, the King's Point, the U.S. Merchant Academy in New York, where I went to, the motto is "Acta non verba," deeds, not words. So, as I said to you, I'm a storyteller about what I've really done. Most academics haven't done anything but study books. So I watch what a person does, not what they say, which goes back again to macro. I mean, I can't believe Putin is blaming the Ukraine for inflation.
No, Biden is blaming Putin for inflation.
Yeah, he's blaming Putin for inflation.
Yeah, oh, it's Putin's it's Putin's price hikes.
Yeah. And then Biden was the guy that cut down the Keystone XL pipeline. So how does it affect me? So I'm watching this. I just watch what, you know, Biden has had strokes and all this stuff. They don't report that. Yeah. It's really interesting. My wife, Kim, is on it about this one. Man, that's her hot button. The guy has got no brains left or something. But anyway, when he cut down the Keystone XL pipeline, I have no stocks. I have no equities and I have no bonds. I stay completely out of what I call paper assets.
Right, right.
But I do own oil wells and I do own the oil. I do own gold mines and I do own the gold. I don't own mining stocks. Mm-hmm. I own the mine. I own the resources. So when Biden cut the Keystone XL pipeline, I went, oh my God, what's he doing? So oil at the time he cut it was $30 a barrel approximately. It immediately went to $130 a barrel. What that meant, I said, okay, what Biden is going to do, or the Klaus Schwabs of the world, they're going to raise inflation so high because oil is the blood of the economy and civilization. It provides fertilizer and all this. The moment he raised oil to $130 a barrel, because what he did, and not what he says, what he did, I got richer because my oil being delivered to the refineries went from 30 to 130. So I'm happy, I get rich. But the problem is 60%, it was 30, I think 40% of Americans were in trouble at the time when he came to office. Now it's 60%. Hmm. So 60% of Americans now hurt because they're standing at the gas pump. Like I said, microeconomics, pumping gas. So what happened? And then they see the food prices go up and they go, what happened? Because they're so micro, because they don't attend things like the collective. They don't come to your events, well, Kenny's events or my events. So they hang out with their PhD friends and, you know, hate Trump. But they have no idea what's going on because they never taught them anything about money at school.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, so I got richer, but I'm afraid our country's going to come down now because, as you know, historically, who's killed the most people? Communists. And that's why they would defund the police, take away our guns, and all this stuff. It's going to be civil unrest, George. I'm afraid.
Yeah, and I think that's what goes back to their push for this Ministry of Truth. To make sure that they can control the narrative in an effort to try to control the people. And, you know, going back to Kissinger, I don't know if you've heard this quote, but it's one that I used in my presentation where he says, if you want to control the people, you control the food supply.
Really?
That's right. His specific quote is, if you control the food, you control the people. If you control the energy, you control countries. If you control money, you control the world.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, they're trying to reduce energy use or at least leverage what's going on in Russia, Ukraine, and all the money printing and all the other, you know, options they have at their disposal, all the decisions that Biden can make. They're trying to use that to condition people to use less energy, which is, I think, their first priority. But I think that if we go into a recession, which is probably likely, and if the market continues to go down, the next crisis they're going to try to take advantage of, or how they'll try to take advantage of the next financial crisis, is by controlling the money through a central bank digital currency.
I agree. And, I agree.
Yeah, I'd love to get your thoughts on that, because I'm sure you've looked into it.
Oh, I'm a gold bug and silver bug. I don't save dollars, you know, I save, because Kenny and I use debt.
Yeah, right.
Debt is money. That happened in 71. debt and taxes are the way money's created. Other thing is, you know, the fractional reserve system. Mm-hmm. If you put $10 in the bank as savings, the bank lends out $100.
Yeah, now they don't even lend that out. They just make new money that didn't exist before. Right.
But the thing I'm watching overall, I'm being 75 years old last month, this is the first time we have a global debt crisis. You know, Greece went down and all this stuff, and Cyprus went down. But this is the first time that the entire world is this much debt. Yeah. And as record says, they can't stop it now. It's the Frankenstein's monster. So it's going to take down the entire world. But I could see that coming, going back to 1964, looking at a little dime going, what is this copper tinge here?
Mm.
And then, as you know, on August 15th, 1971, Nixon took the dollar off the gold standard. And I was a Marine pilot flying in Vietnam in 72. And my rich dad says, hey, Nixon took the dollar off the gold standard. Again, it's macro. You know, what does that mean? He says, the world's going to change. I went, look for some gold. So in 1972, Marine pilots aren't the brightest matches in the box, you know. So my co-pilot and I cut a deal where we'll be partners. And we found on the map of Vietnam a gold mine. So we decided we're going to fly to the gold mine and buy gold at a discount. And so, well, why would we get gold at a discount? Well, because the NVA had just overrun them, North Vietnamese Army. So the gold mine was now behind enemy lines. Again, Marines aren't the brightest guys. And we said, okay, let's go. And so we flew behind enemy lines, you know, tanks all blown up and all this, like you see in the Ukraine today. And it's like sneaking off over to the Russian side, you know. And we land and we go through this village. We disarm, we take all of our flak jackets off, all our weapons, all our knives. And we walk to the village in Vietnam going, hi, we're here in peace. We're capitalists, not Marines, you know. We're so stupid. I couldn't believe it. And we walk up to a gold vendor. It's a little Vietnamese woman, and she's got the bright red teeth because they chew betel nuts. And I'm looking at these gold nuggets, and I realize it was illegal for Americans to own gold. We don't know what gold looks like. Remember that? I'm going, holy mackerel, is that gold? And my co-pilot's like, I thought you knew what gold looks like. I said, how would I know what gold looks like? And the two idiots, people like Twiddledee and Twiddledum arguing, you know, about what gold is. And we had no freaking idea. We had no idea. So gold, as you know, was pegged at 40 to 35 bucks. But now he was floating at 50 that day. So I thought maybe I can buy it for 40. So I'm negotiating with this little Vietnamese woman and say, I'll give you 40. She goes, bop.
Yeah.
A new word like Karen, simp, beta. You know? And I'm going, spot. I said, I'll give you 40. Spot. I'm going, here I'm standing in some freaking jungle. Vietnamese all around me. And this little Vietnamese woman is giving me a hard time. I got US dollars. I'm going to give her 40 bucks for a couple of ounces, you know, each. Spot. I'm like, holy shit. The best teachers ever had, George.
yeah.
So we never bought it. And then what happened was my crew chief started screaming, Lieutenant, come back. Like, oh shit. We're gonna get killed today, you know, because we're behind enemy lines. And we run through the village. I remember kicking a duck. They weren't too happy about that, you know. So my friend and I are running unarmed, you know, say, hey, we're here. Run to the one to a helicopter. There was no enemy. I parked the helicopter on a rice paddy.
And it was like sinking, right?
The damn thing was sinking. As I said, Marines, even though with a college degree, are still stupid.
Yeah. But you know what's fascinating about this kind of the lead up in that whole story is it started like the seed that was planted in your head originally. Was looking at that dime, yes. Or that quarter.
That's macro.
A little bit of copper, the macro, right. Yeah. And today, I think what's similar is, at least in my mind, is when I started doing YouTube videos back in 2019, I was talking about a central bank digital currency. And back then, everyone was telling me that I was absolutely crazy. That I was fear-mongering and I was a tinfoil hatter and, conspiracy theorist. And now you've got not only Jerome Powell, but you've got the IMF talking about central bank digital currencies. Yeah. I mean, China has basically starting kind of the beta phase of their, or the trial phase, maybe a better word, for their central bank digital. Now it's mainstream. So for me, looking at the macro, that's kind of my moment where, or maybe it preceded that, yeah. But that's a moment, I guess, that really solidifies my view on the future, them pushing toward this central bank digital currency to achieve those objectives that go all the way back to Machiavelli and to Malthus.
Amen. And the downfall of empires.
Yeah.
Because every time when the Romans debased their currency, it was the end of the Roman Empire.
Yeah.
When the Chinese printed paper money, it was the end of the Chinese Empire thousands of years ago.
Yeah.
So the concern I have is I think we're at the end of the American Empire.
Yeah, agreed.
When they had to debase the currency. And that's what your friend Jeff Snyder says. We have the shadow banking system, which is an extension of the fractional reserve system. We don't know how much debt is out there.
Well, yeah.
We don't know. We do not know. So that's why, I started buying, I bought gold in Vietnam for the first time, and I started collecting silver back in 64. And I now own gold mines and silver mines, and I have tons of gold and silver. I also own oil because my college degree at the academy was oil. And so I was selling oil tankers with Standard Oil out of California. And today I went in to buy oil wells. So that's why I said when the communist Biden cut down the XL pipeline and oil went from 30 to 130, I'm getting richer.
Yeah.
I don't own Exxon or Phillips, all that stuff. I own the oil. I'm a hard asset guy. So is Kenny.
Yeah, I think the moral of the story there is we're going into tumultuous times.
Yes.
So you want to make sure that you've got at least a good percentage of your overall purchasing power out of the banking system and out of financial assets and out of paper assets and into something that's tangible. Because at the end of the day, that's how people throughout history have survived any type of wars, any type of hyperinflation, or past fourth turnings, which I think is something we're going into today, and we'll probably, be in until, oddly enough, probably 2030.
Right, and that's probably CBDC, as you know, it's a surveillance system.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not any different than the dollar is today, except it's digital. It's not crypto. It's digital,
and that means your account goes through the Federal Reserve instead of a commercial bank.
It's an observer. They have more tracking ability.
Yep.
And so the reason there's a long answer to the great question, why do I have gold and silver coins? They can't track them.
Yeah, there you go.
No, so let's say I want to buy your car, I can walk up to you and say, I'll give you silver coins.
Yeah.
But if I use CBDC, they track me.
Yeah. Or if you want to buy the Communist Manifesto, you can do that without it reducing your social score.
Correct. Yeah, social credit scores.
Exactly.
So that's the long answer to why I'm concerned about CBDC, is because it's another surveillance. It is really George Orwell's book,
It is, isn't it?
It really is. Big Brother is watching. So CBDC is Big Brother.
Yeah. I was at a conference the other day, Robert, and I saw a guy that was wearing a t-shirt that said, make 1984 fiction again.
I think it's a little late for that one.
Yeah. Hey, right, buddy. I know that we're on a time constraint, so we'll go ahead and leave it there. For the viewers and listeners who want to find out how they can get your book or any of the other amazing books that you write, where should they go?
Well, thank you. It's Capitalist Manifesto is the latest one. We finally have paper. Imagine that.
Yeah.
That's a sign from God. But I think I just like more than me, I'm concerned about who you are and who your friends are. Yeah. And then you're going to do the Rebel Capitalist show in Florida?
Yeah, Rebel Capitalist Live is June 24th through the 26th.
I'll be there, but if I can encourage you, not that I'm going to be there, but if you have friends or family members, drag them there, you know, because they're stuck in micro, not macro.
Yeah.
And if you're you're not macro, you can't see a thing. You're blind. You're standing at a gas pump eating some fried chicken. You know, why is this piece of chicken so high? And that's where 99% of the people are.
Yeah. Why can I not buy baby formula?
Yeah. And they can't see it because they have no macro. And macro isn't just macro. It's you know, well, this is history. Like when I saw that little coin in 1964, I didn't know it was Gresham's Law, but I got smarter.
Yeah.
And today I know that was the mark of when the Romans did it, it brought down the Roman Empire. The Chinese did it with paper, it brought down the Chinese Empire. So that's why what you're teaching with the Collective and Rebel Capitalist show, bring your friends to it, open their minds, because people are falling behind, not financially, but information wise. So thank you, George.
Yeah, well, thank you. And just to be clear, Robert will be speaking there along with others like Doug Casey, Brent Johnson, Jeff Snyder.
Oh my God. So, the gods, the gods.
Yeah, Robert always loves
gods of macro.
All right, buddy, enjoy the rest of your day, and I will see you in your office, the Rich Dad offices, on Tuesday morning.
Okay, looking forward to that. Thank you.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Rebel Capitalist Show. For more content like this, check out the Rebel Capitalist blog at georgegammon.com. Or go to the George Gammon YouTube channel.